Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to part two with Ellie Flippin here today. Of course, Michael Glosson joins us again from his undisclosed bunker somewhere in the world.
Somewhere near the coast of America.
Yeah, how deep is your bunker? Because your internet seems really good.
It's actually not very deep, but that's part of what makes it a good bunker. Is that
yeah, it's like a half basement
underground.
It's a half basement. I don't think this classifies as a bunker. I lived in one of those for a while. Those half basement things—they're horrible, horrible conditions. Yeah. Today we're basically continue the talk that we were having about Ingo Swann, his amazing, I could say career. I don't know if there was much money made in remote viewing at the time, but his amazing life and the discoveries. I think it was, you know, a pioneer really in all of this remote viewing stuff. And there's been so many people after him sort of taking up the helm, but he was really the one that sort of put this on the map. Ellie, of course, thank you for joining us again on UAP Studies podcast for part two. Michael was asking you a question last episode, and I thought maybe we could go back into that. So maybe let us know what that question was, and we'll take it from there.
All right. Well, again, thank you for having me on this platform. It's so exciting to be able to share my uncle with you guys and share his life and share what I think his message was for humanity. Because at the end of all of this, I think that's what's his end goal. So Michael had asked about what happened to remote viewing. If remote viewing was something the government was invested in, then suddenly all of a sudden 95, this report comes out and it kind of disappeared. They kind of disavowed this technique and it disappeared. And I would say, well, I don't think it disappeared. First of all, I think it went corporate, you know, as kind of a anecdote. The University of West Georgia, where Ingo's archives are, tell me that people come from marketing and from R&D looking for art, for remote viewing insights. But of course, you know, there are a lot of training programs and books and podcasts, YouTube videos, whatever. But that's really not the story here. I mean, that's a fascinating story, but not really the real story. And so, you know, the real story is, at least from my viewpoint, like how I've kind of come to understand it, is that at this point, when it's sort of being phased out, technology had reached a level, right? There's surveillance equipment that far surpasses what somebody could do with their mind. But ultimately, I think what was happening is we were talking about how there could be things that were hidden underneath this program, that this program, remote viewing, was actually a cover for something else, you know, a way for them to look into things that were of an other than human origin, you know, and we were sort of talking about the aerospace complex. But there was something else that Jack Vallée mentioned in his Forbidden Science too, and it was in a conversation that he had with Puthoff in 1973, when Puthoff tells him, hey, there's a group that's looking into UFOs, trying to figure out UFO bases, and they're using my psychics. And, you know, his psychics at that time were Pat Price and Ingo. This is, you know, this is the fall of 1973. So I think this is the group that when Ingo says, hey, whoever you are, you ones that have the problem in relation to tracking those things that are like apparitional or hallucinatory that seem to come and go, take things, seem to have a sway over us. I think this is the group that he's talking about. So I kind of wanted to break that down, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Jim Mars, when he was looking for the next big thing too. He was an investigative journalist. So he was looking for the next big government cover-up. And when he talked to people, he found it was like the government cover-up of UFOs. So he started on this investigative journey and he went to something in 1992. It was a talk given by Stargate remote viewer and former Ingo student Ed Dames. And he was standing alongside John Alexander. Guess you know, John Alexander seems pretty big in this world. And
He's
then
a pretty big name, yeah.
They're a pretty big name, right? And then in Scumboss, General Stubblebine, who was sort of running the RV, you know, the unit that was overseeing the RV stuff. And so they were taught. So Dames was talking about RV, and then all of a sudden he starts talking about these giant inhabited underground caverns that are filled with transcendental energy beings, you know, ones from a different dimension who can appear and disappear in our own dimension and can access your minds. And so Jim Mars is like, oh. Well, this is pretty fascinating.
And this is what year again, Ellie?
In 1992. This is way
Okay.
too
So still the cliche age of, not talking about UFOs. Yeah.
Yeah, and here are these three big names talking about remote viewing and transcendental, or I guess you would call them hyperdimensional beings in the same sentence together. You know, this is, and I imagine for Mars, pretty like mind-blowing to hear this. So, in Jim Schnabel's 1995 article, Tinker, Tailor, Soldier, Psi, this would be the article that preceded his book Remote Viewers. So he was also investigating RV at the same time Mars was, so like the early 1990s. And in this article, he writes that while Dames was at the Fort Meade unit, that's where the remote viewing unit was centered in Maryland, stories began to circulate about unusual experiences during remote viewing sessions, particularly those engaged on what he called advanced training targets. And I'm like, oh. So what exactly are these advanced training targets? So when you trace it all back, it starts at Fort Meade, and the programs and training operations officer Skip Atwater. I don't know if you've come across that name in your travels, but for a while after he was with the Fort Meade unit, he got involved with the Monroe Institute, and he was the president for a while. But anyway. So it's papers he received from Hal Puthoff in the early 1980s. So somewhere like 1980 to 82. This is, of course, when we were talking about Fort Meade was running Project Real Flame. That was Monroe's out-of-body type of remote viewing. It's called extended remote viewing, or ERV. So remember, we sort of were talking about that last time. So Puthoff had gotten these papers, he said, from one of his psychics, the ones I'm like Ingo and Pat Price. But in this particular case, they came to Puthoff from Pat Price in 1973. So as the story goes, Price brought this file to Puthoff in the fall of 1973. This is the same time where Valle was saying he had that conversation with Puthoff, that there was a group using his psychics to look for UFO bases. So these papers are a series of notes and sketches that Price says that show that not only do extraterrestrials exist, but they've established four underground bases here on Earth. So in the Pyrenees, East Africa, Alaska, and Australia, all of which he says he's psychically penetrated. That's what these notes and sketches say. So at these bases, Price says they're to reinforce BTLs. And BTLs are a stand-in or an acronym for between life implants. Okay, so we need to understand here that implants are often used within the Scientology narrative, and Price was a Scientologist, so they often called them between life implants. So they're kind of part and parcel of Scientology's extraterrestrial narrative, according to sources in the public domain. So part of the process of going clear from these sources is to remove these implants. So they say, after we die and we're disembodied, we travel to a station, these implant stations, and we're implanted. So we're sort of shocked into forgetting and then put a narrative into us. And so by going clear, it's sort of like trying to remove those implants, if that makes sense.
Okay, so it's not like a in between spe I thought it meant like a in between species between death and alive there. Okay, thank you for
So it's
clarifying
like
that.
when
Yeah.
you die, you leave. Your body, your soul leaves and goes to one of these stations, and you're like implanted with, you forget your memories and implanted with something. And then you're returned to Earth and you reincarnate in a body. So that's sort of this.
So
I
they
would
would have
just.
to implant something that is only accessible to your soul or is attached to your soul somehow, right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay.
And so the Scientology thing is to remove these, right?
Okay.
So. There's a really interesting book. It's called The Road to Xenu, Life Inside Scientology, and it's written by Marjorie Wakefield, and it was written in 1991. It kind of like her travels through Scientology, and it talks about all the stuff that she learned along the way. Anyway, so I don't think it's a stretch to say then that these notes and sketches that Price is given to Puthoff are some way coincide with the Scientology narrative, right? Okay, so Price came on board at SRI in the spring of 1973. And so there are lots of sources that hail him as sort of like the super psychic. But I found that his sessions the ones he did at, so he was tested with Ingo at the same time, a part of the reason why there was CIA funding in 73, that his sessions weren't done under the same kind of protocols as Ingo's, nor was he as accurate.
Can I
And
ask a question, Ellie, here? Because I'm just curious. So Ingo is part of this. Price becomes part of this. Do you know what they're like? How do you get recruited for this? Like, do they just find you spontaneously?
Well, what is so with Ingo, he's connected up to put off. He's going through that trouble at the ASPR, and Clive Baxter says, "Hey, there's this guy over. I read this neat paper on this kind of tachyon that this guy put off is really investigating. Why don't you contact him?" Right. And so Ingo calls him, and they have a discussion, and put off says, "Come out here, and we'll play around." That's how that happened.
Okay.
How Price came to SRI is a little muddled, right? So both Schnabel and Jacobson in their respective books say that that Ingo and Putoff ran into Price when he was selling Christmas trees at a lot in Mountain View, so not far from SRI. He had a business in Lake Tahoe, and part of that business was selling Christmas trees in the Bay Area. Schnabel says that Putoff and Price met in an LA training course for Scientology. Another source says that he was a security guard with Lockheed, and he heard SRI was doing some psychic stuff, so just walks in the door. So once you know that the
That
story's
sounds
not adding
cooler. Yeah,
up,
that sounds cooler. Yeah.
right? Like, I don't really know. It's kind of, there's not a definitive. He just shows up one day, and Putoff says, "Hey, let's run these coordinates," and he seems to do really great at them. But he doesn't seem to do them in the same way that Ingo does. And now it's like the summer of 1974, and the CIA decides to run what is called, what's often referred to as, like, now the gold standard, where he's able to, like, specifically draw this kind of crane from the Soviet Union. And everybody points to that and go, "This is why RV works." It's like, it's so spectacular what he's done. But it's
Is it because they
also
gave
when
them a
this,
coordinate and said what's there, or they asked for a specific object, the crane
no,
itself?
they asked him for what was there. It was done over 4 days. And the issue is, you can find there's actually two declassified documents on this. So that the CIA guy who was Ken Kress, who was sort of in charge of exploiting RV for the CIA, does a whole narrative of his, like, my journey through the CIA's use of remote viewing, and that's one declassified document, and I'll give you guys the link to it. And the second is, so because the CIA is going to invest a lot of money into this, they want to look at Price's session, and they want to have it analyzed. So Kress has it analyzed by a CIA's, like, photo analyst, and then they have a group that's run out of the Los Alamos laboratory, which is kind of looking at new technology to see if there's kind of any security risks, like something. So
I
the
think you
photo
just
analyst.
name dropped some Bob Lazar businesses there, like Los Alamos and all that.
Oh,
Yeah,
I guess,
it's all part of the same
Well,
circle, isn't it?
you mean Los Alamos National Laboratory, though, not
Correct.
Los Alamos, where they, okay, the
Yeah, the laboratory,
nuclear
the
research
laboratory.
place. Yeah,
Yeah, like, so
Bob
there's
Lazar
so
has a similarly named
yeah,
place.
yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So th this is so they have a group there that's just looking to see if, like, are there any security risks, right, for something. So the photo analyst looks at it, and they're like, "Wow, they actually have photos of stuff there," and they're like, "Well, it's spot on." But this analyst says, "Hey, it's so good. There's two things. Either he really saw it, because it was done over 4 days, and there weren't strict protocols, and he was kind of vague the first day, and then the second day he goes home, and they do it over the phone. And he comes back the next day with really detailed information." So this analyst is looking at all the drawings, looking at all the transcripts, and he goes, "Well, either he's super good, or he got it from somebody else, and he could be a disinformation agent with the KGB," right? Like, there were some things he knew. There was a lot of good, but there was a lot of bad. There was kind of a lot of outdated information, right? So At this point, I feel certain that as soon as a risk analyst for the CIA says disinformation and KGB, and it's the height of the Cold War, that's going to set something in motion, right?
And the
And
Soviets were the reason we got into remote viewing in the first place,
in the
right? I
first
mean, we
place, right?
knew that
Right.
they were doing it, and so we started our own program. So there is some sort of plausible prior
Were
reason
they,
that they
but were they far more advanced than we were at that point when it comes down to remote viewing?
I don't know. I mean, there you can find documents that will tell you one way or the other that it was disinformation on their side, or it was disinformation on our side, or we were more advanced, or they were more advanced. It's, you
Where
can
everybody
find
lied across the board, right?
everybody, right? Like, right. So you can be certain that if he's saying KGB, somebody's ears are picking up, right? So I think that's probably when they started to set a plan in motion to figure out if there had been an infiltration and to monitor him. And they test him. And this declassified document I'll give you talks about that. Ken Press talks about what they do to test him. And he's sort of good, but he's not good. And at that point, they go, they cut off funding to SRI and they put Price under a direct contract, and they move him to a different, quote, more pragmatic handler. So, which is really interesting, right? So they're
What
like,
does that mean?
okay, a more pragmatic handler.
Yeah, like what?
Well, so I think Kress is more like, I want to believe that this phenomenon is real, kind of, and would, well, I'll kind of discount that maybe he wasn't there and he did it by the phone, and maybe he needed his own space to be able to get into it, and
Right. So
versus a
more
more
skeptical,
cool,
or at least critical-minded handler, I
more
guess.
critical, So at that point, funding gets cut off and Price is moved out, and he actually gets a job with the Princess Coal Company in West Virginia, and he's now out in West Virginia. He's on the East Coast. SRI is doing his own thing. Ingo's back in New York. All right, so. In 1977, the FBI raided the offices of Scientology's Guardian's office, and the Guardian's office was the church's own intelligence wing. So,
That's
this is
just
coming from, so
crazy,
they had
but
their own, I
yeah.
mean, it was huge. It was just, it spanned interstate and internationally, right? So, in 1978's New York Times article, it's reviewing. It's a can everything that the FBI found go through a court case? And so the article is reporting on what was found in these files, and they found that loads of documents, the documents that the FBI got filled a 16-ton truck. I mean, it was pretty far-reaching, right? So government agencies, businesses, foreign embassies, 30 countries. I mean, it was significant. It also, like, how to obtain false identities, tap telephones, lock picking kits, electronic eavesdropping equipments. And then also, and this is according to Vallée, again, in his book Forbidden Science 2, materials by which, quote, the FBI came to believe, and he says falsely, that Price was used as a spy against the CIA. So probably not the KGB, but more likely the Guardian's office in Scientology.
So they had the Scientology Church had all that information. I don't know much about Scientology. I'm Canadian. We don't really have that here. But that's crazy. That's like government spying programs. Like they're not equal to that. Nobody's authorized that. That's crazy. You just
Just to interject. A quick story. I used to work for an organization that did like public education about new religions. And so if a Scientology reading room or like a Church of Science started in a new city, we could go there and give presentations on what Scientology is or whatever. And we were they killed the animals of our CEO. 1 year we got audited because we were a nonprofit and nonprofits get audited regularly. And our secretary, who'd been there for like 2 or 3 years, just vanished. And then we found out that she had been a paid employee of the Church of Scientology. We had to like have offices
So
are
they have
like
spies.
swept for one. Oh yeah, they're crazy. It's crazy. It is like
It's
so over
concerning,
the
man.
top, weird, like crossing so many lines, sort of harassment and things. They'd show up in cities somehow knowing that we would be there without us knowing how, and we thought our phones were tapped and stuff, and turned out to be the secretary that they had planted there. But like, yeah, they're a scary organization. They've kind of waned in their power over the last 10 years or so with all the documentaries and things coming out. But yeah, any connection to them would be a bad thing.
So I think the CIA probably figured this out, right, themselves. And in July of 1975, Price suffered a heart attack. And he was known to have heart troubles. This was according to Schnabel. But there's, articles out there saying, the strange death of remote viewer Patrick Price. And I mean, it just seems to me anybody who was probably trying to plug a leak, and it could have been on any side. Inducing a heart attack was a well-known trick. So, I mean, it's not beyond the
And
sense of
how old was
plausibility.
Price when this happened in 75?
I don't know, it was 50s or 60s. I could,
Okay, so he
like, I mean,
wasn't a young guy, but
he
yeah.
wasn't a young guy. I mean, I mean, and he was a little, you can see pictures of him online. It wasn't like he was, super thin either. I mean, like Schnabel says, he was not exactly healthy, but at the same time, the timing was odd. Let's
Right.
put it that way. The timing was up. So the natural question is, why is Price's session about the Crane so lauded? Like, why is it shown to be like this gold standard in RV? And I can only guess here, but I think it would be a catch-22 situation, right? If you come out and say like it was through some sort of documents that were going through Scientology, like, so he'd get something, he'd pass it along. Somebody would get it out for him, pass it to him, and he would be able to articulate what was at that place. I mean, that could potentially toss the whole program into a graveyard, right? So I think they're in a catch-22. But we know it didn't. We know it didn't destroy them because ultimately the CIA came back and they got additional funding and it grew and they expanded into different agencies and ultimately remote viewing became operational. So this is what's so interesting to me is that you would think Putoff, who by the 1980s had to have known about the FBI raid, right? In the documents that were found. I mean, Vallée certainly knew about them. I mean, he puts it in his book. So you know that he's potentially connected to this clandestine agency. You know the CIA stopped your funding and took Price away and put him in house. And so there are lots of articles that say, initially Putoff was into Scientology. I mean, so there are letters between him and Hubbard. So, I mean, he doesn't deny that he wasn't into Scientology. But by the late 1970s, mid-1970s, he's actually, according to Schnabel, lending his support to anti-Scientology groups. Or calling church a cult and worse. And so he's trying to put a lot of distance between him and Scientology, and even trying to, I guess, to a certain extent, try to discredit them. So why would he want anything of Price's? And anything that sort of has sort of a Scientology narrative or lingo, like to me, that just doesn't seem like a rational thing. Like if you have these papers and they have things about implant stations and alien bases and your anti-Scientology, I mean, the rational thing would be like, I would be burning those papers, right? Like I wouldn't want them. But what does he do? He does something totally unexpected. He hands those to Skip Atwater to test them out. I mean, the question is why? Why would you do that? I mean,
Have
why
you
would you
contacted
hand
Putoff and asked this?
No, I mean, but I think that's such an interesting question. Like, why would you hand off UFO alien base materials to even begin with if you're so against Scientology? And then I have to think the only reason you would hand these off is that you knew there was proof of something in these, right? There's something in these notes. There's something that superseded everything that you dislike about Scientology. And maybe even something that your sponsors or some internal player thinks is really important, right, to the clandestine world. I mean, to me, like, how else do you hand over papers that talk about with implant stations on Earth to an army group that's concerned with like nuclear war with Soviet Russia or escalating conflicts in the Middle East, or locating lost assets, assessing war risks, real world threats. And you hand off these things about like alien bases where they're implanting and mind control. Hey, check these out. I mean, do you think that would you seem like a credible or sane person if you did that?
Not back then. Not back then. Not at all.
Right.
No.
So there has to be something to them, right?
Yeah,
I
for
mean,
put
in
off
my
to tra yeah, to transfer them over, there has to be some sort of validity there.
some
Unless he's
sort
a
of validity.
disinformation agent, but by then I think, or by now we would know.
You would know, right?
Yeah.
Right. So what's interesting is there's a clue. So there's a letter that Hubbard wrote to Ingo. There's no mystery. Ingo and L. Ron Hubbard had a friendship, and they wrote letters back and forth. And
But
this
also,
one's
L. Ron Hubbard seemed to have known everyone at this time. He was like, I mean, he's the most prolific fiction writer in history. Like, he used to just eat bottles of amphetamines to keep himself going all the time. So, like, the fact that anybody had any relationship with L. Ron Hubbard at this point in time is not like a, it's not really a hit against them or knock to their credibility, because he was just contacting everyone, and it was before everyone realized how much of a fraud the dude was. So just for anyone who immediately thinks that like any association with L. Ron Hubbard is a knock or a slight to their credibility.
it's not an Epstein. That's what it is. It's just not an Epstein, right? It was a different thing. Yeah.
Yeah, a different thing. So in this letter of 1974, so Price is out the door, right? He's under this special contract with the he's in West Virginia, a special contract with the CIA, right? He's working with his own private handler on the East Coast. So in this letter, Hubbard says that he is so grateful to Ingo, Hal, and Pat, the three of them, helping to lay the groundwork for something. So there's a part of me that's like, well, maybe this relates to a letter that Ingo wrote to Hubbard in May of 1973. So this is before Price showed up. And he calls out two things in this letter. He says, one, money is being directed to possible biological automata, so like biohumans, and effective mind control systems as part of questionable motives of invisible benefactors working toward economic control of the planet. And two, we are not alone on this planet. Ingo.
Ingo says that, not Hubbard.
Ingo saying that to Hubbard. He's saying, and I think this has to do with, remember Putoff telling Valet, there's a secret group that's, using my psychics. So probably from day one when Ingo's, walked in the door, he's been acquainted with this secret group. He's starting to do work for this secret group, and he needs to tell somebody, hey, I found out there's somebody here who's doing something where they're using mind control and they're trying to take control of us, and we're not alone, meaning there's something else on this planet with us.
So, Ellie, just so I understand, is he saying that the mind control program or whatever the heck they were up to is to control the population, the way the population thinks and views things? Is that what he
Yes,
meant? And this is what,
that's what he meant.
70, is
Sorry,
73, right?
1973, right?
Wow. Wow.
Right. And then he's saying, and then we're not alone. There's something else on this planet with us. I mean, I think he's telling Hubbard because, as you said, Michael, the Scientology narrative is an extraterrestrial narrative in a way. So it's like, okay, there's somebody I can re who can help me with it, help me understand this, help me navigate this, because I'm finding myself in a difficult situation. Hey, there's, people here who are working to own us, basically, and there are people from outside the planet. Maybe they're both in the same, I can't tell, but let's just say they're united. So I need somebody to talk to about this. That's how
And
it
this is
comes
also
across.
part of the like ideology, sort of ideological narrative of the 70s is this concept of like population control. And, Noam Chomsky's writing about manufacturing consent, and I think Marshall McLuhan's book, I'm not sure when it came out, about sort of control through media, and sort of placating the public through consumption and consumerism. Like these are all like kind of radical but popular ideas that are taking root at the time. So it doesn't surprise me that that also is sort of making its way into Ingo's own thinking about the sort of things he's experiencing and seeing, and because he's trying to piece things together too, right?
Yeah,
Fascinating.
right. And so then, price shows up at the end of that month. So it seems to me that three of them were engaged in something, right? Something important, laying the foundation of something, working on something like this group, right? That's trying to understand UFO bases within the government that put off Tal Valley, his psychics, Ingo and Price were being used to help sort out. So it very well might be that those files that Price handed to Putoff about the four bases were the notes and sessions. He, or maybe it was somebody was actually within Scientology that was able to psychically penetrate them. I don't know. Maybe Price was. Certainly Ingo were doing with this secret group, and so the way that they could frame their understanding of what they were experiencing at these bases, where they saw things, people's thoughts being implanted or some sort of mind control or thought transfer, is they may have been using the vernacular of Scientology, right? Instead of this being Scientology papers of sort of like, as Ingo would call it, our reality box, right? We explain, like we were talking about, you explain things in what you know and experience. So it could very well be that what they saw at these bases were mind control. Or some sort of device that was able to send out some brain waves or low frequency or some sort of technology, let's say.
What do they actually describe in these bases? I mean, so they say they see these sort of secretive rooms, but like what's in them? What did they see that made them think that's what they were viewing?
I mean, Price describes what's happening. There are different things happening at these bases, so at these four different sites. But basically, what Price is kind of seeing is that there are these people who look like us, but not us, who are operating machinery that are able to hypnotize us, to put different thoughts into us, able to control our bodies, maybe able to control the weather, that maybe there's some sort of like a shield over the earth that's sending signals down, that kind of thing. I
And
mean,
you know,
that's
it's
a
with.
I'm like broad overview. That's a really
Sure.
broad overview.
Yeah. Well, what is it? The technology so far advanced is indistinguishable. Wow, that's quite the word, Jason, from magic. And it's true. Like, if you're so far advanced, I mean, the stuff we're doing now with our cell phones, if I was to show somebody from the medieval age what I could do, they would think I'm a wizard. They would not know it's technology, they would think it's some sort of wizardry. It's the same thing with these technologies. What concerns me, though, it's, if this is true that these entities are here, they're capable of doing this, there are multiple locations on the planet. How much, in a sense, of free will do we really have? Because if we have groups like Scientology that are taking it upon themselves to spy on people, and obviously they've had an interest in UFOs, they're just quiet about it. But I'm interested now in thinking, what's the history of Scientology's and UFOs, and how much do they know? I mean, it's based on the religion, right? But I'm interested in that now because it's, looking at the way the world is right now, let's admit it, it's gone crazy, completely bonkers. And I wonder if that's part of the psyop, just to make us so confused and fighting over the stupidest things that should have been settled a long time ago. It's so messy right now that when I hear about what you're saying, Ellie, about programs that dated back from 1973, 2024, what kind of program do they have now or machinery? I'm scared.
And I think, you know, that's what Inga was saying is so now if we like sort of step back before RV was made, you know, public and discredited, right? Atwater is now in possession of these price papers, right? So now we're in the 80-82 time frame. So, you know, thanks to Putoff, he's got these papers. And he decides that he's going to task the remote viewers with what he calls advanced training targets, not the US government. This is Atwater. He says these were done by him directly, his idea to challenge remote viewers, to test them, to evaluate them, task them based on strict protocols. Oh, so these are those advanced training targets that Schnabel found and Mars was, you know, finding out about when he saw Dame speak. So Atwater made a presentation to the International Remote Viewing Association, that's IRVA, in 2009. It was called Project 8200 about these. And the promo on for this presentation is Project 8200. Use the next generation of Stargate remote viewers in an attempt to verify or refute the information provided by Pat Price. And this presentation is available to IRVA members, but it is also available at the University of West Georgia, has all of the IRVA presentations, so within their archives. So just, you know, at that point. So, you know, I think we had to think this through a little bit more. You know, if verifying perceptions is what you're after, you know, I think remote viewing places where lots of people have had experiments, you know, like maybe the apparitional sites of Mary would be you know, a better test, or maybe areas where there's suspected alien abductions, the Loch Ness Monster, gosh, even Bigfoot. Everybody just seems like if that's what you're after, versus using sites from 1973 with Scientology lingo attached to them that, you know, from a source that the CIA and FBI had questions about. I mean, really, to me, that doesn't add up unless there was something there, right? I mean, I believe that someone knew there was something there and there was a reason these guys were now going to be tasked to go there. I mean, and what's interesting is that some of these sessions have been declassified. You can find them in the CIA reading room, and I'll send you links to those too. So I think
Well,
that's a big clue to me.
it seems to me that if they were doing these as sort of diagnostic tests or control tests or something, they're going to give you targets that have two, at least two qualities to them. One is targets where you know whether, you know, you can confirm whether they're accurate or not, and two, targets that have some sort of actionable intelligence value to them. So it would seem to me like that would be an appropriate target because it has some sort of intelligence value, but it would also be something that they're not asking you to actually go out and tell them like what is here, we don't know. They're asking you, and that may be why it's sort of outdated. They're using sort of information that they already knew about or something, but that also might make it open to having been passed along through some back channel to and make it suspicious, sort of the way that you were saying might have happened through these documents that the Scientology seemed to have. When Hal Putoff handed those documents over, was it because he handed absolutely everything over, or did he just select the documents? Because if he handed everything over, maybe it doesn't show that he had all that much confidence in it. But if he handed them over to say like, here's what you really need to focus on, maybe it does signify. Do you have any sense whether it's one or the other?
I mean, all you can find is, hey, here, check these out, right?
Okay, so it's not like
Right.
he was ordered by them to give
But
them all of
we don't know, right? We don't know that.
it.
It
Might
just
be
is,
I'm
right? It's just interesting that he would hand over these things, and then Atwater, whose, you know, feedback is very, very important, right? They're not going to be testing you on somebody's perception. Otherwise, it's like telepathy, right? Or you're picking up on what somebody has in their mind. I mean, that's not remote viewing. You can't have a credible session unless you know there's something about that. So testing somebody on somebody's perceptions, like you said, is not going to be a viable test
Sure, yeah.
unless you know there's something there and this is the next phase, right? This is the next phase from what Ingo and Price were doing. This is the next level. I mean, that's how it reads to me, right? And The first assignment was made in 1982, and this was to ERV-er. So again, ERV is the Monroe Out-of-Body Altered States type of RV. And that's done to Joe McMonagle. And Joe McMonagle, he RVC sites, and then at these four sites, and then adds there are additional ones under the seabed. And so next up is CRVer. So now this is one of Ingo's students, Tom McNear. He's tasked in May of 1984 with a seabed site. And there's a declassified document that records this. And I'll just send you links to these because I know, so people can look at them themselves. It's
Oh, we'd
pretty fascinating.
appreciate that. Yeah.
Yeah. And then, from this Project 8200 presentation that I mentioned, Atwater says they were then assigned in February of 85 to CRVers and Ingo's other students, Bill Ring and Paul Smith. And they do Mount Hays in Alaska, and they find things that are similar in nature to the Price paper descriptions. And at this point, Atwater fears like maybe he's influenced them because he's seen these papers and he sees what they have. So again, that question of like, are they reading my mind? Or are they picking up on me? Because it's so similar to the Price paper. So he decides to put the coordinates into an envelope and then give them to Ed Dames to run a former grill flamer, so a former ERVer who was like Mel Riley, who was sort of instrumental in helping get grill flame off the ground. Once it did, he went back to his job as a photo analyst and then came back to the program when CRV was being introduced and learned that. And so I kind of have to explain, we were talking about that sort of the difference between the types of remote viewing. And at some point, they kind of merged, I understand. So the group would like use CRV to get to the target and then use ERV to get details. So I just thought that might be
One question,
important.
Ellie, is it when they do this remote viewing, is it only possible in real time, or could they look at a date before, like a previously or a date in the future? Is that possible?
Oh yeah, I mean, and Ingo tells us, tells a story about how they figured that out. It was after Price had passed away, and Hella Hammond came into the group at SRI, and so they were doing these outbounder experiments where Targ and Putoff would go to a location. So they'd get a location from an assistant. They wouldn't know where it was. It would be in an envelope, and they'd drive for, I don't know, a few minutes or 2 miles or something like that, and then open up the envelope and then go to wherever it was, and be there at a specific location. So they didn't know until they got in the car driving. And then the experiment was at that set time, Hella would didn't, draw, was set to draw what she viewed as what they were viewing, right? If that makes sense. But
Okay.
on this particular day, so she's a professional photographer, and on this day, she's got somebody who's going to actually buy a group of her photographs, which is kind of a big deal, right? So she's like, I can't miss
Excited.
this meeting, right? Like, I can't miss this meeting. I'm going to sell these photographs. It's a big deal. I can't do the test today. And they're like, well, you have to, Ingo's like, well, you have to do the test. She's like, okay, I'll tell you what. I'll just draw now where they're going to go. And Ingo was like, well, this could be interesting. So why not? So she does. And then he tells Targ and Putoff, hey, this is what I did. And he seals it up, right? So they don't know what she's seen. They go do the run their experiment like they normally do. So they go and get their coordinates and then they drive and then they figure out, I guess they document what they've seen. And then they come back and they open up Hella's stuff and it exactly matches what they have done. And that's how they figured out, hey, you can remote view into the future, you can remote view into the past. So, does that answer your question?
It
Yes,
does.
thanks.
Yeah, absolutely. I didn't know if that was the possibility of remote viewing or if it only played out in real time. So, yeah, that answers my question.
So in this sort of session, right? So Dames is the monitor, Riley is tasked, and it's this declassified documents from January 28th, 1987. And like I said, I'll send you the link. So he's going to, I think it's going to be Mount Hays, right? And the description in the document is actually it's personnel associated with ET bases. That's the name of the RV session. So he's being tasked He says to go to Saturn's moon Titan, Mount Hays in Alaska, and somewhere he designates as South Africa or South America slash Africa. So when he remote views Mount Hays, he starts to see something. He writes the word robot, then funny looking people. Next, he sees a dark, spacious building, and it appears at this point he's inside a platform, he writes. The words dark, darkness, empty follow. The next page, he immediately writes, strange feeling in my hand, like it's being energized. To the right of those words is sort of like a mystifying squiggle. Like it's sort of at odds with the drawings that have preceded it, right? And then he writes, people, then zooming away in a vehicle, a feeling of being in space, and nothing after that. So, in additional notes, they're not in the declassified section, but I think they're part of Atwater's presentation. What he's done is sort of sketched out the surrounds of Mount Hays in detail. So where he went before he was zooming away. So there's like a mountain on the left, it's sort of a platform with an entrance like a cave, and below it a lake, and then mountains to the right. So in the next session, again, this is declassified. It's about a year later, and he's tasked to going to something called the Galactic Federation headquarters. And this session starts like the one from the year prior. He describes and draws the surrounds, and it looks almost exactly like the surrounds from Mount Hays a year ago, almost
Oh.
identical. Like both with a mountain, this cliff platform on the left, the lake below, the mountain range to the right. So although he believes he's off world somewhere, he goes inside. He writes streaming down, then draws arrows descending down what he describes as a tall vaulted room. The arrows pointing down to a body, his body lying on a platform. He writes familiar place with an exclamation point. Then this place seems familiar as I've been here before. And he climbs up onto a platform, he lays down, and he's illuminated by a bright light from above, head to toe, where then a robed figure comes from. There's like a group, comes from the group, stands next to him, and puts their hand over his solar plexus. And then he breaks away from the session with a feeling that I should have remembered something. So clearly, he was physically in the room with Dames when both of these sessions are happening. So, really, the question is like, what happened to his soul or his being or spirit or astral self or gosh, consciousness? I mean, it seems like something did, like something took a part of him somewhere. And he was examined, and I don't think for the first time either, because it's so similar. He's like, seems familiar. I should have remembered something. And he's never able to really make the connection. Interestingly, I think, though, his subconscious was trying to crack through, like saying, I should have remembered this place. It seems familiar. I've been here before. And his drawings are, exactly the same for these places. So,
So this is your, just so we get more of a picture, it's a platform or some sort of entrance into like maybe a mountainside or something along those, but
And
it's cavernous. It's like huge, right? It's like an empty Costco type thing,
yes.
right? Yeah, gotcha.
Yes. Yeah. And then once he goes inside, he's descending down this big vaulted, he's with arrows pointing
Okay.
down. And actually in the declassified document, he has more drawing. So it's like his body, and so inside he's like an altar. Like his body's on a platform in an altar. He calls it like a religious holy place, who's inside where these robed figures are around him. And his drawings are like his body. He's looking at his body from the side and from above, right? And he's got different angles that he's drawing of it before he finally breaks away and cycles,
Some
Anyway,
trippy
but he
stuff,
calls,
yeah.
yeah, it's trippy stuff, right? And it's in a declassified document.
So,
So
what? But we don't know the location of this. If it was in the United States, if it's the Alaskan location.
well, he calls it the Galactic Federation, and he actually expands on this in Jim Mars's book, Alien Agenda. He said it was a beautiful place, and he felt the experience is serene and peaceful. And it's this Galactic Federation headquarters. He says the place of the controlling authority. He said it's outside of our galaxy, where there are numerous celestial races which have formed a federation, and this was their headquarters. He says he tagged on the term, this is his quote, he tagged on the term galactic, meaning it was encompassing all nearby galaxies. We, so I'm like, who's we? The government, your unit, whatever, wanted to see the controlling authority. Like, how did they know there was a controlling authority? Like this, So then Riley continues. So we termed it Galactic Federation Headquarters, a place he said he felt like he had been there before, like he should have remembered the place. And there's drawings of it, the outside of it are just like Mount Hayes.
Yeah, that's pretty trippy, man. So
Isn't that pretty cool?
he was observing his body manifested in that location, but from a third person point of view, even though his body's at the other end in the United States, just remote viewing it. It's almost like he's viewing a double life, another him in that room. That's
Yeah, I
crazy.
think it's called bilocation, where you feel like you're in two places, but it's almost like three places, right? So his body's one place, his consciousness is on some slab somewhere, and then he's also viewing this.
Wow.
Wow. But I would note that there is in Scientology lingo, this sort of extraterrestrial narrative, something called a Galactic Federation, which is pretty interesting to me because, to my knowledge, the fort there was nobody at the Fort Meade unit who was a Scientologist or professing any kind of Scientology doctrine. I mean, Atwater says he has no idea what BTLs were. Price had died more than a decade ago. Putoff was working on his zero-point anti-gravity stuff. Inga was in New York. He's pretty much retired. He's like painting and writing, and he's doing like this waking dream work with Dr. Epstein. So the question for me was, where did this idea of a Galactic Federation as an interstellar controlling authority, how did that get into his mind? Because he says he came up with the name. And by whom? That was, that's my
Well,
question.
recently the Israeli he's retired now, but he was in charge of the space defense, and he said that Donald Trump knows about aliens and UFOs, and that there's a Galactic Federation, and they have some sort of oversight over us or something. And I mean, this guy was in charge of defending Israel, was part of the space program for 30 years. Some people dismiss it as, oh, he's getting senile. Maybe he's just losing his mind. But he said the Galactic Federation, same as what you're just mentioning now. So interesting.
Which, right, which is, it's in a declassified CIA document from 1987. It's in a book from 1980s, 1997 is when Alien Agenda was published. So, I mean, it kind of sounds like to me that there's somebody who wants us to relate this to something in space and not dangerous, because, there's Riley saying it was sort of religious and peaceful and serene. But maybe it's so there is something here on Earth of great concern, something those guys at Ingo said, whoever you are, figured out a while ago, something like Ingo's invisible benefactors, with bases with biohumans. That's what Ingo, calling the bioautomata in the Price papers, the group that sort of looks like us, but not us. In the McNear papers, which are declassified, he actually goes into detail and he says he runs into strange people in a prison in his session. Ray in his session says he ran into people in with a program feelings. Myth in his subdued people. And then Riley's robots, he said robots and funny looking people. So it's kind of interesting that all these people kind of run into these beings which seem to be running some sort of machinery that can manipulate our memories, our emotions. It can make us feel like what we're experiencing is serene and peaceful. But I mean, if you think about it, like Riley thought he was engaging with some peaceful galactic group, and then a part of him is up there on a slab being examined, right? Something that could actually take hold of his thoughts. I mean, his squiggle, like something is, he's feeling energized in his finger. So, something's taking control of his hand in this session. So, like, can they take over us physically and mentally? I mean, that seems like a pretty big thing you'd want to sort out, right?
Well, it gives the question of whether or not if you really are a free entity, if you do have free will, because if they come in and shut you off at any point in time or make you participate, but you can't do anything to do anything. I mean, you're just numbed and you go along with it. Do we really have control? And the thing is, if we have these overseers, whatever they may be, and then we have humans who want to do the exact same thing, but fractions of humans. You got Scientology who wants to do it. You got the CIA who wants to do it. You got the WEF who wants to do it. Everybody's trying to control everybody. So it's concerning. especially if we have already that to begin with a species that's not even human.
Right. So I think this is what I think what may have happened is in this process, some sort of doorway was open starting in the 70s, right? Something that maybe Ingo and Price came upon. They came across these entities, right? And it's something actually interesting that was raised in the Art Bell interview with Ingo. We were sort of talking about that last time. So Art Bell says to Ingo, I'm told as carefully as the protocols were structured in the military program, so the RV program, that other things began to creep in. And Ingo says, sure. And Art Bell, that other things began to be sensed, entities. And Ingo goes, right. And Art Bell says, is that right? And Ingo says, of course.
He's a man of few words.
So I have to think that this group that's working under RV sees what's happening and they're trying to sort this out, right? Something's able to control us. There's some technology here. Is it technology that humans built? Is it technology that aliens built? Is it technology that interdimensional beings built? And so I kind of harp back to this quote from Alien Agenda from Ingo. And he says, to my knowledge, UFOs and ETs do not cooperate with humans regarding our efforts to substantiate anything about them, right? So we have been totally unsuccessful, right? So, on top of this, the other things mentioned in Mars's books about how these beings can access our consciousness, they're using some sort of brainwave entrapment, some way to electronically use mass hypnosis on us. So yeah, I think there was a group trying to figure this out. And I think this is when the plan was hatched. And now really to get to the heart of the answer to your question, Michael, it's like my theory is at this point, the RV program has gone really far away. I mean, they're using channelers and tarot card readers and things are just risking exposure. And so this little hidden group needs a new place to hide. Right, they can't hide under RV. It's drawing too much attention. Right, there's these advanced training things. There's so much attention is now coming down on the program. So in my conceptualization, the program is canceled, discredited in the hopes of distracting the public from the truth. Right, the deeper problem that you've just talked about, Jason. Right, and the problem that I think RV was getting closer and closer to unraveling. So they were trying to really get right, go to this authority, go to these bases, try to penetrate. What are they really doing? What's really going on? And in return, they were blocked, or like in Riley's case, he was taken and examined and his memory wiped. And they're like, okay, that's not working. So what we'll do is we'll just keep the populace mired in a is RV real or not controversy and distract them from the truth while we work on dealing with this. And we're going to continue it, just not in a directly linked intelligence operation. And so for me, I sort of watch it go, the budgetary responsibility of the RV program moves first from the DIA back to the CIA. And this was done in 1994. And then came lots of high-level briefings on remote viewing and ETs by those in the know, including, and this is interesting, one documented in a 1995 declassified memo describing how Ingo, this is by then a 10-year veteran of the RV program. He's been out of it for 10 years, but he was meeting with well-placed individuals within the intelligence community to discuss ETs. That's pretty fascinating. And so then following this sort of hiding in plain sight methodology, on September 20th, 1995, so this is 2 months before national attention would be, focused on the RV program is sort of spilling out into the media. And 9 days ahead of that report that you spoke about, right? The one, the scathing disavowing of remote viewing, that evaluation of remote viewing research and applications, a quiet businessman by the name of Robert Bigelow, a billionaire investor with interwoven ties to aerospace industry and the military complex, he establishes a new venture, one called the National Institute for Discovery Science, or NIDS. And the purpose of NIDS was to investigate paranormal anomalies, the biggest one among them, UFOs, right? And a few months later, Jack Vallée joins their board. And not long after, Putoff became involved, as did Alexander. And then a decade later, Bigelow would, thanks to his friend, Senator Harry Reid, receive $22 million of secret funding from the Pentagon. So the attention now focused on Earth properties known for their suspected paranormal, or shall we say, using Ed Dames's words, transcendental happenings at Mount Wilson and Skinwalker Ranch. And for Ingo's part, he puts out penetration, the message really about our need for us to arm ourselves against the telepathic ways and means being directed at us. That is to build a shield against brainwave frequencies used to manipulate us. So.
That's it, and it's a fascinating thing, in the regards of, if that is the case, are we? I mean, my mental fortitude is not as good as it could be. I'm easily distracted by phones, and I know this is a form of mind control as well, in a sense. Technology is a mind of mind control too, but if we are constantly being manipulated, or thoughts, like you got to wonder, sometimes where your ideas come from. And it almost sounds like the same way angels and demons operate. You get some good whispers in your ear, you get some bad whispers in your ear, same with thoughts. But this is becoming more and more of a theme of good and evil, and there seems to be a theme of good and evil within the ETs or interdimensional beings as well. And I find that to be very interesting, because the soul somehow is tied into it, or consciousness tied into it. Near-death experiences are tied into it. Or we're going to be interviewing Christopher Noel, and that's his whole book was about that, like how it's connected. All of this may be connected somehow, but I think as a species, we forgot it. Like, our history is not written. We've only got, what, Michael, 5,000 years maybe of history?
Oh, written history? Yeah, you don't have much more than that. I mean, we know we find cave art and things, but we don't have a ton of writing from before that period. Yeah.
And even like in Australia, there's a cave art, but it's all grays. Like, you could tell it's grays. And that thing dates back 5,000, 4,000 years. And there's Aboriginals that did that. And it looks like grays, big black eyes. They made a mouth. And who knows how far back this goes? And who knows if we had the ability, like Ingo before, like most of us just listen to that sixth sense and develop it. Maybe we are being numbed down. Maybe, are we equal to these things? That's my question. If we're equal, then they're dumbing us down for a reason, right? Because we're not
Yeah,
doing it
I
to
know.
them, they're doing it to us. But it's
Right.
amazing. Yeah, it's an amazing
Wait,
subject.
so then the narrative is that NIDS is created partially to swallow the remote viewing sort of remnants of the original uniform.
My theory is there was something hidden underneath remote viewing, right? This dealing with things of other than a human origin.
Yes.
And remote viewing as its cover was getting blown.
And
And
rem
remote
so remote
as
viewing
it.
sort of evolves to become ET focused or something like ET focused, and gets peddled off to a private group, NIDS, where it can't be touched by FOIA requests and Senate, all those things. NIDS is no longer around, though, is it?
No. I mean, I don't believe so. I mean, Bigelow is. He moved on to Skinwalker Ranch and he sold Skinwalker Ranch, right? And they've all gone different places, right?
So
So
what?
put
So
off.
did it just die with NIDS, or do you think it's now somewhere else?
I mean, I think what you have to do is what are the people who are involved? What are they doing, right? So put off started the To the Stars Academy and what's Valet doing? I mean, Bigelow, kind of interesting. He's really just focused on does human consciousness survive after death? And his big thing is, reincarnation. That's what he's focused on. And sort
I
of
didn't
that
even know that.
argument. Yeah. So the argument, sort of where he's taking it now is, hey, we're sort of, I guess you could say we're sort of like at a crossroads of humanity. Like we could go that transhumanal way, the materialistic machine way, or we can go on the way of, that spiritual. I don't mean like in a religious way. I just mean that spiritual aspect of ourselves, that bettering of ourselves way. And I think that's what he is focused on. I mean, he has His organization is aimed at that. He does essay contests that he's done essay contests on that. He's really focused on human consciousness now. So, maybe ultimately that's what they figured out. We've tried, we can't penetrate them. We tried penetrating them. We got even our remote viewers got taken over. We tried this. We're at these places. We still can't figure it out. So maybe the best thing we can do, maybe like Inga was saying, is we work on ourselves. We figure out ways to enhance ourselves. I mean, obviously they have the ways and means to psychically penetrate us. So maybe we in turn should figure out ways to keep them from being able to psychically penetrate us.
And what were Ingo's ways of doing that? I haven't read Penetration.
So I mean, penetration was just, hey, we know that there's something that they have that's more advanced than we have, but at a species level, we must be able to have it too. And so I don't know what it is. He says I would call it telepathy plus. But I mean, ultimately, I think that's why he wrote his power books. He's saying we have all of these, we were talking about those perception awareness systems, and we could start to activate, we can learn about them, activate them, grow them, strengthen them so that we can better prepare ourselves to meet on an even playing field, let's say, with them. And that's probably the last thing they want from us is to be able to penetrate them, to penetrate their abilities. So I think that was ultimately his goal was we need to activate these things that we have inside of us.
Nice. Ellie, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about Ingo. Now, are you writing a book? Like, you got all this information, all these research, like this amazing research. Are you planning on publishing a book?
Well, it is part of this book, what I would really like to do is just make a TV show about Ingo and all of these exploits, because I think how fun would that be, right?
That'd be pretty
Even to
cool.
wouldn't that be pretty cool? So I
Unless you
think
get canceled and you don't see it coming and you're like, it's ironic, right? No, I think it, that remote viewing is super important, has been part of this phenomenon for a while, but we really haven't delved much into it. So this was a great course into understanding a little bit more. I mean, I'm just amazed that in 1973 they were saying that they had technology to control us, and most likely that's the US government, if not Russia's and China as well. That concerns me the most. I mean, the others, I don't know their personality, I don't know their nature, but I know ours. And ours isn't good. Any of that technology in our hands means it's used against us. It's not going to be used against these entities. It'll be used against us. And it's, you taught me again, you both taught me about the Church of Scientology and what they're up to. Very sneaky little buggers. Yeah, it's
Less so now, but thankfully, yeah.
but still, like, left unchecked, what do groups like that end up being, right? And like, I mean, the WEF is a big threat to our world right now, but why? Because they were left unchecked. Nobody was watching what they were doing. So it's the same thing with these groups. And that's what I'm worried about the most, is that you got so many different groups trying to control the middle class. Like, they're all fighting for, how do I control these guys? It's disgusting the amount of power grab that people want. It goes to their heads. So this only goes to prove that, I'm scared about the government knowing now. Like, maybe they use remote viewers to find other remote viewers. Like, saw the movie Heart in Atlantis by Stephen King, and it was based on that, a remote viewer psychic that ran away from the facility, played by Anthony Hopkins, and they come looking for him. And he had a great quote, and he says, you always know they're there. You start feeling them behind your eyes because they see what you see. And I was like, oh, that gave me chills. And Ingo's story just reminds me of that. That's crazy. Michael, do you have any final questions for our guest today?
My traditional final question is, what books should we be reading to understand all these interesting things the way that you understand them? If you could sort of press three books into the hands of our audience, what would they be?
Oh, you mean to understand everything that I know about Inga?
Well, I guess remote viewing or Ingo Swann, or just if you could give us book recommendations, what would you have everybody read?
I mean, if they want to know about remote, how Inga saw remote viewing, his book Everybody's Guide to Natural ESP. It's a very, very simplistic introduction to remote viewing. So he talks about what he did at SRI and then the process of starting to activate this, what he would call your natural abilities. So that, is a good first primer book of his. About what's going on in the government, in what we sort of talked about today, I think both Jim Schnabel's Remote Viewers book and then Jim Mars's Alien Agenda and then also SciSpies, those two books. I mean, sort of what we talked about.
Yeah.
Jim Schnabel, Jim Mars, and
Okay.
Ingo
And then
Swann.
just for how to yeah, and then how to sort of live a good life that Ingo would say is, he had two little books
Oh,
and I
did
think
we lose?
there's
I think we lost you there. Can you tell us those again? He had two little books.
yeah, two little books, Purple Fables and Master of Harmlessness. And he said they were dictated to him, but they're, just they're like told in the sense of a fable. Purple Fables are four of them, and then Master of Harmlessness is just sort of like one story. And it's really about letting go of those demons and embracing light, which I think is a good way to live life.
Absolutely agree with you there. Again, Ellie, this has been fantastic. Thank you for doing a part two. This will be released, and as the listeners already know this by now, but we're going to release both episodes, one and two, on the same day, at the same time. So if somebody wants to binge watch or binge listen to the full set, they can. And we're going to have, some panels later on in the year, and we would love for you to join us on some of these panels, different people from all walks, different studies. And then of course, just keep in touch with us as well. And if anybody wants to learn more about this, is there an Ingo Swann site that they should visit?
Ingoswan.com. And it has some really good, lots of good videos. And in fact, just if you want to know what CRV are, there's some great videos with Bob Durant, who's one of Ingo's later students, not starting a private student. And it's an interview with him just walking through the CRV stages. So if you want to see what remote viewing looks like and how it works, that those are some great videos to kind of learn more about it. But they're also on YouTube.
It's a whole
Awesome.
fascinating world. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. It's been a
Yeah.
pleasure. I really enjoyed our both our two conversations.
Awesome. Thank you so much, guys.
Thank you.